On this week's show, discussing capital project management with Andy Verone from Contruent.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, we're back. Y'all might notice it's a little different. There's just two of us today. That's right. Andy was brave enough to sit down with me and have a conversation. Before we do that, just say hi. How we doing, Andy?
Jeff, thanks for having me, bud. Excited to do this with you.
Yeah, I'm excited. I love it when a guest is willing to get outside of the box. Before we get outside of the box and dive into something I want to learn just a lot more about, we got to pause for the cause.
Construction in general is a highly stressful environment, and you see the stress, and you always get the "I'm fine" answer, but always try to dig a little deeper because people say, you know, I haven't been sleeping great, and I'm really eating crappy food, and I feel anxious, I feel depressed, I feel, you know, we'll start to really get into those conversations and figure out what's going on. There's some great resources, and if you go to brentdarnell.com/resources, first, there's an emotional intelligence and physical symptoms survey test. So we get your emotional profile and we get your physical profile based on physical symptoms, and we tell how your body's working, and then we can correlate those two. And if burnout, if you're experiencing burnout, it will show up in probably both of those evaluations. It's free. You just download it and do it. And just so see where you are. And if burnout's the top two or three that pop up and show up there, I would pay attention. And start to really look at what are you doing with stress and nutrition and sleep and exercise and daily reflection and those kinds of things that we know we need to do to keep us healthy and keep us sane and keep us on track.
You've got to check in with where you are. You've got to work on balancing. It's not about the diagnosis. It's about preventing people from getting too far down the road. Like most of our construction folks that listen in, they take care of their cars. They keep them up to date. You know, this is no different. You've got to put in the maintenance on the body, on the mind, because you're racing this car around the track, right? We're not going to change that we're a bunch of race cars out there, but we can change that we do the right maintenance, take the right time, and really check in.
One more resource in there, the Tough Guy Survival Kit, guy being gender neutral. It's specifically written geared toward more field folks, but there's a really great chapter on stress management and peak performance in there, and it talks about meditation techniques and mindfulness techniques and breathing techniques.
All right, we're back. So when I say this is going to be an interesting episode, I met Andy a little while ago and we started talking about something I wanted to learn more about. So I hope you guys are ready to take a ride with just the two of us today. We're going to sit down. We're going to learn a little bit about Andy's background, of course, because you know you got to know where people are coming from. But also importantly, we're going to dig into capital project management and project controls. And what does that mean? And I couldn't think of anybody better to bring in than Andy for this one. So Andy, say hi to everybody. Give them a little bit of an idea. This is, you're not new to the business.
Jeff, I appreciate it. And thanks for being kind. So as Jeff knows, this past September marked my 40th year in engineering, construction, and technology. So if you smash that all together, and it goes deep back into my roots as working for an engineering firm right out of college and having the opportunity to play a lot of roles at that firm. And at the end of that career of 25 years of being in industry, I actually had the opportunity to be CIO for the company. So deep engineering and construction background, it goes well beyond just my experience. My dad and grandfather were both in the industry. So I look at myself as being third generation. So just really, really fun to bring tech into that industry.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of interesting because, you know, you're talking about a third generation. And usually when we're talking to third generation, there is something new to the experience. So I feel like tech might have been an interesting part. Go back to those days being an engineer, some of the things you experienced, and then why tech? You know, why end up as a CIO when you are an engineer instead of continuing to stamp and do things like that?
Yeah, it was Jeff, it's a great question. It was a really, really great career working in industry and having the opportunity to work on projects, you know, all over the world. There was always a miss. We seemed to be willing to invest in technologies, but we also created a lot of data silos. So I think the organizations that I both had the opportunity to be CIO at, they knew there was more. There was more out of the data that they were generating, right? And they understood the value of that data. And I think in a lot of engineering and construction companies, they want to put someone in the role that actually has the experience. So it was just a great combination of having the industry experience and really have an eye on the prize. And that was the data, right? What was the value behind the data that the companies were generating?
And those were two large firms, you know, publicly traded companies. So what were some of the insights? What was some of the power from that data that you know, maybe you can help people? Because we hear that a lot, right? Like the power's in the data. Data's the new oil. And you're like, okay, but what am I doing with it? Am I greasing up an engine? Am I turning it into gasoline and putting it in a car? Like, so what were some of the tangible things that in that engineering firm you were able, those engineering firms you were able to do with data?
Yeah, I think the first thing was like unlock the data, right? Put the data in the hands of the people that needed it the most. If it was a contract administrator, if it was a procurement person, if it was someone that was actually doing the billing, right, on a big project, giving them access to that data, letting them see the data as early as possible, and that all drove profitability for the company, right? If we were able to, you know, be more proactive on managing that cost data, that payment data, it made a big difference, right? If we were able to decrease day sales outstanding by a few days by giving that access and having that workflow, right? Having that data in a workflow that multiple people can be reacting and acting on that data at the same time, it was very critical, right? So it's, you know, thinking back to the years, you know, that was the CIO years were early 2000s, probably up to about 2010. Cloud was just coming, you know, into play, and distributed systems and collaboration systems. But, you know, back in the day, it was, how does that data help the company be more profitable?
I think it is to this day. And it's interesting. Some of the folks have been, you know, touting the cloud and distributed services and collaborative platforms as sort of the way to unlock the data. Like it wasn't unlockable before, but I challenge, there's some folks that it doesn't really matter what the systems are. They don't understand what they're trying to unlock and why they're trying to unlock it. I rarely hear when I sit down with somebody that, you know, I want somebody, a contract admin, I want somebody in payment processing, I want those people to have access to that. It's always, you know, and I love my field folks and I love my, you know, fabricators and thinkers, but, you know, this is blocking and tackling that I think gets missed a lot as part of making a big difference. So I think a lot of people are sitting on the wings waiting for the cloud to unlock everything. It's like, no, this is a strategy. And I'm kind of interested in some of the strategy, or at least the change in that strategy before, not before cloud, but that I think is separate of cloud. It's really a strategy, right? And what are some of the strategies that kind of went through your head, especially seeing as you went up through the ranks and experienced it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think for me, it was first, and if I wish I had a picture I can share with you, we had to kind of map the process, right? And that process was from the time that the individual was hired into the organization through the retirement of that person and the equipment and everything that individual, you know, had possession of. So mapping out that process and understanding those key points where data intersected with the process were critical. And listen, we spent probably over a year mapping out those processes, as is processes, that then led to a best practice. How could the technology then lay over top of the as is process to bring alerts, workflows, information? Listen, there was no cloud back in 2000 when I started this journey. We were hosted, right? We didn't want to own servers and do all that heavy lifting. So we had some hosting providers. But at the time, it was more about how to unlock the process that then would then illuminate the data. It's really, really critical.
Yeah, and it's so overlooked. You know, there's so much talk about the flashy things and the flashy tech. It's why I got involved in it in construction. You know, I loved watching robots and cool reality capture and laser scanning and all of that. But, you know, as I got deeper and deeper into it, it did become apparent that, like, this is not – people believe there's an overnight success. There's no such thing. It's just not that you can't you can't take any technology and fix a problem that you don't understand. And to hear that it took a year for you guys to map that out is actually, to me, fantastic. It had to take a lot of discipline not to try to fix while you're trying to analyze. I think so many people set out to do a process map. A, they want it to be a day. Right. And B, they can't stop themselves from trying to fix something that they yet don't understand.
Yeah. And I think to your point, Jeff, I think some early wins are helpful. Right. So even if I think back to the mapping process, you know, that what I challenged my team to do was if there are some low hanging fruit that we could fix in the current systems, right, without having to invest in, you know, spending money on new technologies. Let's go do that, right? And by the way, that actually gave the team credibility. So this, you know, we asked for a lot of business users, right? It wasn't just IT, right? It was people that manage projects, manage, you know, contracts, manage procurement. We asked for a lot of their time. So in this process, giving them something that they can bring back to their stakeholder groups to say, hey, we're working on something much bigger, but we're going to fix a few things on the way is critical. I think, you know, being a CIO in an engineering construction company today was a lot different than when I did that in the early to mid 2000s. There's over 4,000 software providers that market themselves as engineering and construction tech. It's overwhelming, right? Mm-hmm. And I happen to be part of one of those software companies today. And to me, you can point solution yourself right into even a bigger data problem that I had to deal with many years ago.
Yeah. And oh man, we can have a whole episode on, you know, point solutioning yourself to death. And I was reading a Built Worlds article this morning just about, you know, the frustration with that and et cetera. And I'm like, it's a maturation process, right? Like, we have to realize there was a problem and we got something done. And, oh, wait, by the way, we created a silo. Now we need to connect that into a workflow. But you can't know any of that unless you map the process. And the last part about that mapping the process that I heard that I want to make sure people listening hear is you started with the person and you started with hiring. And I've had a couple chances to sit down and work with people, and just it's amazing that they'll talk about an accounting system, or they'll talk about an estimating system, and you'll ask, okay, how do you get paid time off? How do you get your pay stubs? And they're like, oh, it gets dropped in a folder here, and they go here and they grab this, or they get a PDF and they do. And I'm like, this is an experience for your employee. Yeah. Right. And we always talk about saving 5 minutes, you know, save some money on the bottom line. But actually, saving 5 minutes of an employee's day so that they can focus on what they love to do and what they're great at, and the other things can be easy. Like, I got one of these things. I can check my paycheck. I can request my paid time off. You know, I can know things from here. And that's an experience. That's part of understanding your technology stack, but more your customer's experience, right? And as a CIO, your customers are all the employees of the company.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I wish I had some of the modern technologies today, because at the end of the day, if you don't have that easy, convenient customer experience, listen, it makes the change management aspect of a major transformational project really, really hard. And I think about what we can do, you know, even today, you know, working for a small company, I can look at my personal data, my payroll data, you know, request time off, all with just a few clicks of a button. So I would love the I would love that type of technology that I, when we were trying to build that into screens, you know, before there was a lot of mobility.
I remember creating kiosks back in the day, exactly. As many places as I could, just because like we couldn't do it, but we knew it was a thing. I'm with you. I'm like, man, if I could have all these, and now there's a million of them right now. Now there's a million of them. So I'm with you.
Yeah. Then you put on top of that, right? You got shifts, you got labor, you've got, you know, unusual work patterns. We had crews that did 14 days off, 14 days on, 7 days off. I mean, that, again, you know, that back to that experience is important.
Yeah. And getting everybody paid on time. Again, it's just one of those things. It's the little death by a thousand cuts that make them go and make them go to another company too. We have to be honest about this. We're in a labor shortage in some respects. And it's really about, you know, making sure that experience from somebody soup to nuts is the best thing it can be, because then they want to stay. And I had never even thought about, you know, if you look at a, like, this is my change management bucket, is this bottle. And if I'm dealing with this much of it in finding my PTO and finding my paychecks and finding the things I need to do, then I've got a lot less for changing my job. If all that's good, I've got more in the tank for other changes, other ones that are going to impact the overall company more, which obviously at some point you decided, hey, I've done this engineering thing, I've done the CIO thing, I see this software thing, I'm going to go make that jump. So talk a little bit about making that jump and what got you to kind of where we are today. I've come across some of your technology and experiences along the way myself. So this is a fun ride.
Yeah. It was, you know, a scary time in my career. It was one of those things where I worked for an Australian based company that was growing in North America. So I had the opportunity to be the CIO for North America for a Sydney, Australia based company. And we did a lot of acquiring, and it was a great ride and really enjoyed my time there. But then an opportunity came up to join Oracle and be a industry leader for a large software company. And, you know, as I was thinking through that process of how do I take my past experience in the industry plus my CIO capabilities, and how do I translate that into a major tech player, it was let's just say it was risky. It was risky. It's probably the best word I can use, but what an amazing ride. I mean, I spent just under 15 years working at Oracle in many, many roles. Probably 6 or 8 different roles that I played. Had, you know, an opportunity to be part of some big acquisition strategies for Oracle. Had the opportunity, Jeff, as you know, helped co-found the Innovation Lab in Chicago, Sydney, and Reading, UK. And it was just a great ride. It was taking the knowledge that I brought with me and applying that to the technology that was driving the industry. So it was really a match made in heaven. And I have really no desire to ever go back into industry. I think the tech world, again, needs to be grounded in what does the industry really need, and how do we stitch the data together so everyone is getting value. Listen, there's not a construction company, engineering company in the world that's just not sitting on an incredible amount of data, schedule data, cost data, performance data, and helping those customers unlock that is critical.
I'm with you. I made the jump as well. Although I'm not sure I'm done with industry, I'll be honest. There's always that twinge to want to go back, because I like the maturation process, and I'm a big fan of that fluid movement out of industry into technology and back. But then there are those that, you know, maybe you did your fair share of the time before, and so now you're balancing it out as we balance those scales. I'm interested I want to cover two things before I get to where you are today. One, what were some of the guiding trends at Oracle with acquisition, with creation, you know, that just drove strategy that way, that you were getting ahead? And did you feel like you guys, you know, made some big achievements there along that road? Is the first one, and I'll come to the second one in a minute.
Yeah, but listen, I think the fundamental strategy that Oracle has to this day is when they go out and acquire a company like Primavera Systems, right? world standard on critical path method scheduling. They keep that acquisition standalone. They don't bring it in and integrate it with the rest of the product set, right? So a global business unit is formed and the identity of that acquisition stays intact. It's a really strong strategy. So you have your own development team, you have your own sales team, your marketing team, and that GBU normally is born through an acquisition, right? And keeping that intellectual property and keeping those teams together that built something incredibly special is important. Then phase two is, what do you need to build on top of that base acquisition? So Oracle Primavera's P6, fantastic for scheduling. What can we surround that with going forward? So really great strategy for a company strategy that's still in place today. So
at the Contech Crew, we focus on technology that solves industry problems. So today, I want to talk to you about Join. Every construction project is a unique prototype, and it's actually shaped by thousands of decisions that impact the owner's business case, design, and the budget. Today, the communication driving these decisions is disjointed across all the stakeholders. Work happens in email, Excel, estimating, resulting in delays, waiting for decisions, waiting for access to information, and sometimes that information is outdated and incomplete. Managing the expectations of the team and keeping the project moving forward is a constant challenge, and a lot of times drives skepticism amongst the contributors. Join empowers general contractors to build with confidence and maximize the potential of every project by connecting these owners through new workflows that fit into your existing processes. We bring design teams and trade partners into a single platform. There's transparency and collaboration in the decision-making, which builds trusts and sets projects up for success. You might be asking yourself, do you need another tool? Well, let me tell you, Join fits in seamlessly with your processes and your other tools. In fact, we're here to help those other tools. Regardless of your estimating system or your project management process, Join will be a valuable added resource without disrupting those other systems and your teams. So listen, put your spreadsheets on ice and leave your email behind for the decision-making platform for the built environment. Learn more at join.build.
Yeah, I love it. And then finally, what in the world were you guys thinking with this innovation lab thing? And man, thanks for building it. I'll just take it right there. So what were you thinking? What, I mean, that had to be some interesting moments of discussion.
It really, really was. And, you know, I'll put that in top three projects that I've worked on over the 40 years. It was an incredible experience and really satisfying to build something that the industry could absolutely use. And that was a key design criteria, was we didn't want to demo construction software in conference rooms. I mean, so the very first design element was, let's build something that simulates a work site, right? It's hard to get on work sites, right? It's hard, especially for software people, to get on work sites. So we went and built an environment for our customers, our partners, which you know a few, and for us to go and engage in solving a problem, right? Simulated work sites, solving a construction problem that you normally wouldn't be able to do on site. We started outside. We wanted to make it as real as possible. And Jeff, you know, winters in Chicago are really, really hard. So at some point we decided we probably needed a roof over our head, and we got much more than that. So yeah, so it really was like, how do we become believable? Like, how do we make this real? Bringing together partners, a lot of times those partners were hardware providers. Mm-hmm. Bring those partners together, bring our technology together, and demonstrate through an experience, you know, what it could do, what value could it add for our customer base. And the ecosystem in itself, not just our customers. What can we do to change an industry? By the way, another key design element, how do we get vocational tech students, not college kids that are deciding to go into the trades, how do we bring them in and show them how cool construction tech is? Right? So for me, that was a personal goal for me.
That's huge. And how do they show, how do we show their parents that like Oracle has invested this much money in a lab?
Yeah.
So that should show a parent that this is a huge industry with huge possibilities. I laugh because I remember Burchin back in the day and him having to suffer outdoors. And then you guys had built a little trailer that he would do his little, like his live broadcast from. And I was kind of like, this is a great way to make us podcasters and tech people suffer some of the elements like the real job site does. And also, you know, it's funny because one of my friends was like, why are they building a job site? We've got job sites everywhere. And I was like, have you met me? Like, no one lets me onto a job site without a lot of high viz and all my stuff's clean. So as soon as I step on, everybody's like, watch where that guy goes.
Exactly.
Like, let's be honest. We got to be careful about that. Exactly. So
the trailer, like, I mean, back to design elements, right? We wanted to make the trailer, you know, absolutely life. Like it had, you know, sawhorses with a piece of plywood. It had very uncomfortable chairs. But what I'll tell you is when we got out of conference rooms and we got people in an element that they were used to, the conversations were priceless. Like, because they didn't feel like looking in through the glass window of a conference room. They were in their element. They were in a superintendent was in his element, right?
Yeah.
It was brilliant, bud.
I love that because it put the shoe on the other foot and the technology people got uncomfortable. And that's a great space when a customer can be comfortable and you can be the one uncomfortable. It allows for a good flow of information. So you've come to somewhere new. So you had a new plan. So, and this is why I wanted you know, really hear your timing was fantastic to talk about this because you've moved on to Contruent. Capital project management and project controls, but a very specific. So why did you make the jump? And then let's get into like, what's this big problem you're tackling today? Because it seems like throughout your career, that's been sort of the path.
Yes, it was just a perfect opportunity. And Jeff, if I think back over the years, you know, we have solved, you know, many big problems in the industry. But one thing we haven't standardized on is project controls and cost controls, right? And I always think in my head, if Contruent could be the project controls data environment for cost, like P6 is for schedule, we've got something. So as I work on, you know, help customers around the world work on mega projects, there really isn't a standard for costing, right? There's a lot of different solutions. There's a lot of different approaches. I believe that in this industry, that there's still an incredible amount of room to standardize cost engineering and project control. So single goal is to grow the company. I spend every day, you know, either through sell cycles or, you know, opportunities like this to spend with you, just kind of evangelizing, you know, the importance of project controls. We work on mega projects, right? It's in mining projects, energy projects, utility projects, oil and gas projects, right? If it's not in the hundreds of millions, then our solution probably not a great fit.
Yeah. So very specific, but talk to me a little bit about, you know, defining what, you know, cost controls for that kind of a project means, like capital project management at that level from a cost perspective. Because I know people listening, and especially for me, this was hard to understand what goes into it. Why would we need an entire system for this? And what does this standardizations even mean?
Yeah. So for me, it really starts with it. You know, if you have cost and schedule integration on your projects, where you're bringing those two elements together, you're bringing the WBS and the resource breakdown structure from the schedule into your cost control accounts. Now you have a marriage of what's being planned versus what I'm spending, right? So at the very basic, at the very bottom of the solution, it's how do I build visibility on both cost and schedule? So integrating those, and it's something we do on every project, we integrate cost and schedule. But going down deeper, it's truly understanding those control accounts that the cost engineer spends an enormous amount of time building, right, as they're bidding for the project, right? having that visibility down to the control account to say what is going to be spent on what and when, right, is really critical. So fundamentally, when we think about and we work with our cost engineers on projects, it's giving them the comfort of knowing that you have broke down and shown the exact structure that they need to manage that cost through procurement, through change, right? Through overruns, right? Maybe we need to go through and how do we manage an RFI and RFQ? System does all that. But again, it's giving the granularity on traditional project management. I mean, when it comes right down to it, Jeff, it's how do I go deep enough in the cost breakdown structure that everyone knows where that money's moving and that cost is moving.
So where you said we need sort of a kind of a single language, and we don't have that. Where are some of the hurdles that when you guys come across a customer or a potential customer, what are some of the hurdles to understanding that process and learning why it's needed? I mean, I think for me, with every software, with every change, it's about why. Yeah. So, you know, what are some of those hurdles?
Yeah, I think I'll give you a really great example. So, you know, the Contruent has been around for 25 years. 18 months ago, we rebranded the company. It used to be Aeris Prism. A lot of people in cost engineering and project controls know Aeris. Been around a long time. We've built a ton of best practices in, and we're faster to deliver, right? So here's the issue. We've spent the time, the money in building reports and building best practices for control accounts and CBS and all the things that make a project control system go. Where it gets hard is there's no standard. So company A might look at our solution and say, I can put that on a project as is, and we can be up and running in 2 or 3 months. Company B may say, that's not how I manage my project. That's not how I would break the cost down. That's not how I would set up the control accounts. We're fine with that. Listen, that to us, that's just another variation of what we need to do. But just like scheduling, like it's hard, you're hard pressed to find a CPM scheduling that looks the same. Even in if we're doing vertical construction, you do it differently. So I think where we see more consistency is in the UK, for example. A lot more maturity in the UK around standardization of cost and schedule. Other parts of the world, it's not as mature. So we embrace it. We can do, if you like what we've done and we've taken our 25 years of experience and built it into the product and you can get up and running on your mega project within a couple of months, great. If you need that customization, configuration, we can do that as well. But you know this, Jeff. There's not a ton of standardization in the data, which takes us full circle. Hard to get value out of data that doesn't have standardization, right?
It really is. It's really it comes down to valid, consistent data that can give you a good insight. I'm interested, what in the UK, I mean, I know a few things about the difference in the way that UK operates, even on the mega project level. You know, is it some of the things around the way they quantity survey? Is it some of the things around the way they operate that allows them to be better and more advanced in that area?
I think if you start at the top and you think about the color of money and the way funding is on infrastructure projects. So in the UK, we're working for HS2, we work for London Underground, AWE, lots of infrastructure and defense, but the owner sets the standard, right? Mm. And in the US, you know, somewhere I've done a lot of projects, how many owners are actually mandating what that data structure should be, what tools you should use, right? Is earned value required or not required? So at the very top, it really comes down to the owners. The owners who own the money, building the asset, are saying, you shall follow this standard. Biggest difference in my opinion, but I think that's, you know, to me, that mandate that we want to see reporting in this fashion. We want this report, you know, generated every other week, every 2 weeks, every month, is a big help, right? It's a big help for those infrastructure projects.
Yeah, it's a big help, and nobody likes being told what to do. But I go back to like dealing with my own kids. You got to give them structure. If you give them structure, you can let them perform at their highest. And so by mandating and placing down those requirements, you're actually giving those companies room to grow into and perform better, because now all of a sudden they're, I'd say kind of forced, but encouraged to see the data and make changes on it.
Yeah. And I think the key is that it's the data. It's not the tool, right? A lot of times people get caught up in that. If they can provide the way they want the data structured, right, then everyone has an opportunity to be successful, right? The tool providers, the systems out there. To me, when I go into an opportunity and I know that there's going to be some guidance and guardrails on the tool, that's where we shine. I mean, we've got the opportunity to meet those requirements and have a great chance to actually win the work.
Yeah. So where somebody's come to you with a really good process, to go all the way back to the beginning, a really good process workflow, a really good understanding of how they deliver projects and what they want out of their cost controls, and maybe kind of where they are on how they do that bidding and work breakdown structure and resource breakdown structures, et cetera, and bring them together. Now you got a shot to really do something with it. And I think, you know, interestingly, Contruent is really focused on mega projects, like you said, 100 million or more. So there's a lot of other opportunities out there for people to learn. And I think I'd be interested to pull at, since most of my listeners, you know, are living in that construction world, what can they pull out of this mega project controls, mega projects, you know, capital project management, that they can take a nugget away for themselves on what they could do better? Because again, they are going to go look, hey, who's the Contruent for the little guy, you know, for the smaller project. I don't want to call it little. This isn't amazing. We call like million, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80, $100 million project is like the little project. You know, we're talking hundreds of millions, billions now. So what are some of the things those people can take away?
I think as we finish out our SaaS capabilities, right? So one of the big lifts when M33 Growth, the private equity invested in Aeris Prism and now rebranded Contruent, is giving all customers an opportunity to use the solution, right? So it's not a big heavy lift, right? So we find that when a project hits a certain amount, the importance of having that project controls and cost engineering, the stakes are raised, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, on some of the biggest projects in the world, that you see the rigor behind project controls. That's not to say that that can't be transplanted into a vertical construction project that's 80 million, right? There's not saying we can't do that. So I think there's a lot of great lessons that we see and we build into our best practices that anyone can use. But in my history, when the stakes are so high and the schedule and the cost is so important, you know, a 1% slip is a huge number. You've got to have a back-end system that's tying not only what's happening on the project on a daily basis, but also tying back to the ERP from a billing perspective, right? So it doesn't really matter how big the project is. I think there's techniques in project controls that everybody can use. Interesting enough, I'll give you a real world example. In the last 3 months, I've been on more calls with general contractors that are in the U.S. that are building robust project controls units. It's amazing. In fact, I was working with one of my business development reps, and he's like, "Hey, Andy, we'd like you to come on this call. It's with a GC." And remember, we don't really spend a lot of time with the GCs. And the first question I asked this group was, "Why are you now like really starting to evangelize and invest in project controls?" And they said, "Our projects are more complex than ever before," right? And they were expanding into an area that they've never done before, right? And to me, it was perfect. So Jeff, to your point, like I said, and we were happy to say, "Hey, here's our best practices. As you guys build out your processes to go, you know, professionalize your project controls organization, let us be part of that journey." So listen, I think it's coming. I mean, just think about how important and how complex projects are becoming anywhere in the world.
Yeah, that's that. That was why when I said we met at the right time, that's exactly why I wanted you here, because I'm hearing more and more about project controls in the industry. And it's nice to hear it tied to some things we've been preaching. Projects are getting more and more complex. Yeah. There's just no two ways about it. Owners are getting more advanced. The buildings that we're building, whether they're vertical, whether you're talking mining, whether you're talking about, you know, horizontal and even roadways, yeah, et cetera, are just getting more and more complex. And cost of money is higher these days. So the cost of an issue, yeah, it's not like it used to be. Labor issues are what they are. We can't throw labor at problems anymore. You know, we really have to be ahead. And then I love this one because, you know, everybody's worried about 2024. Is it the recession? We didn't get it in 2023 completely. Are we going to go? And it, what's construction going to be? And it's like, oh, well, these indexes are down and these are up. It's like, yeah, there's kind of an ebb and flow. And what you're going to need to do is diversify. But the first thing as a technology person, when I say we want to diversify, I think about the level of control and visibility we need. Because how many companies, and you may or may not have had this experience, but I've watched companies diversify, whether that's location, you know, they go to a new part of the country and they're caught off guard, yeah, or they're not watching as closely because they didn't realize that they manage a lot of their projects and costs and schedule and issues by walking around in their offices, by touching people right there. So now locationally they're away. More important for controls, or and we're seeing this more and more with the complexity. You got JVs, right? Joint ventures going out, and you're going into a new. You've got labor, and maybe your market's down a little bit, so you're going to combine with another company to go keep working, keep making money, but it's in something new to you. This is risk.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, I'm spending most of my waking hours in the U.S. infrastructure market because as we see these delivery teams, you know, for wonderful projects like the Gordie Howe Bridge, we've got some high speed rail now in the U.S., right? It's super fun, right? You think about the big work that's being planned from Las Vegas to L.A., right? The Desert Express. There's that component of how does Contruent become the cost engine for these mega projects in the U.S.? So I it's coming, and I think it's the color of the money from the infrastructure bill, we're seeing that now turn into real projects. Yeah. And I think our timing is perfect. I mean, I want Contruent to be the cost engine for infrastructure projects in the U.S. Not to mention, the day doesn't go by that a wind farm doesn't call me, a solar farm. By the way, battery, right? I mean, these battery plants, data centers all over the world. I mean, listen. My dad and my grandfather, my earliest memories of us sitting around the table was my dad and my grandfather talking about, I don't have enough labor and the material's not on site. 40 years later, right? 50 years later, 60 years later, it doesn't change, right? It was a bit brute force back then, but it was the same problem. Oh, what's the economy do? What are commodity prices doing? My dad and my grandfather had those same conversations, yep, 60 years ago, right?
Yeah. The conversations don't change. Just, they get a little bigger. They get a little different. The ways we solve them get a little bit more interesting and more complex. So that's the reason for needing things like this. So, man, I want to thank you so much for taking the time, Andy, to sit down. Let people know where they can go learn a little bit more about Contruent and maybe a little bit more about what you guys are up to.
Yeah. So guys, Jeff, first of all, thank you. I really enjoyed it. And I love the work you're doing. You often say that we have, every project seems to be a one-off and you're right. You know, there's a lot of complexity, but there's also a lot of pride, right? When you're building a project, whatever that may be in whatever vertical industry, there's the ownership and the pride of that project, and you want to make a difference. So hey, that's the world we live in, right? We just have to adapt to it. So yeah, please visit our website, www.contruent.com. Find me on LinkedIn. Love to engage with you as your user and your community goes and captures more complex project controls processes throughout their work. So Jeff, I really appreciate it. Thank you, man.
Hey, I appreciate it. And I think 2024 is the year of talking project control. So I expect to see you out there. And I'm with you. I mean, we do say that every project is a snowflake. I think more and more of it should be repeatable from systems to technology to work breakdown structures, et cetera. But that's never going to change, that the outcome is always something unique and beautiful that all of us can look back at. That's why, you know, you're three generations in. I'm a first generation into the industry. And I may go back and forth from technology to construction, but this is my vertical. This is where I live now. Because, hey, I've said this a lot of times. Where else do you really impact the world around you so much as what we do here in the built world? So,
for sure, bro.
Yeah.
Appreciate to work with you, Jeff. Thank you, buddy.
It's great to work with you. I appreciate you coming on the show. And I just want to thank Andy for joining us today. Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Andy Verrone. To read all our news stories, to learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit The Contech Crew. This is The Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.